If Washington wants to get right with voters, it has to start listening to them. Welcome to Beyond the Bubble. It's a short President's Day week, and I'm Kristen Roberts, Washington editor for the 30 news organizations all around America that together make McClatchy. Every week, we call the senior correspondents who live and work in political battleground states and ask them to open their notebooks and to talk about how voters are reacting to Donald Trump, the GOP Congress, and the actions coming out of this Capitol that affect their lives. On the hook this week is Chris Catalago, political writer at the Sacramento Bee. Hello out there, Chris.
Hey, what's up?
What do you want to talk about today?
Well, this week, many of the lawmakers are back home in their districts, and they're bracing for a fierce response from voters.
I want to talk about CPAC, and I want to look at this speaker lineup and see how many of these people are mini-Trumps versus traditional conservatives.
And in the lightning round, we will each pick a person or a trend that will be big in the 2018 or 2020 elections.
I love the lightning round. One more thing before we start. We want to hear from you about what you're seeing and hearing in your state. So please email us and share at btb@mcclatchy.com. That's BTB as in Beyond the Bubble. Let's get started.
January 20th, the day the people became the rulers of this nation again.
Our ideals and fundamental values are being attacked. Do we retreat or do we fight? I say we fight.
He heard those voices that were out there that other people weren't hearing, and he just earned a mandate.
It is time for Democrats to grow a backbone and get out there and fight.
The American people would like to try something new. We would like to see the country go in a different direction to change the course for America.
He doesn't take this presidency seriously enough.
So to all Americans, hear these words. You will never be ignored again.
Welcome back to Anita Kumar, who covers the White House and Donald Trump.
Thanks for having me. It was my first weekend off since Donald Trump became president.
You and all the members of Congress. And hello to Katie Glick, our senior political correspondent who's been covering Republicans all over America.
Hi, Kristen. Excited to be here and here in D.C. for what's going to be another crazy week, I think.
A very crazy week.
As usual.
Let's get started. Lawmakers went home this week. Seems like not so many of them are eager to see voters. Those who plan to see their constituents are bracing for the worst. Let's listen to a citizen questioning Mark Sanford in South Carolina, and thank you to Marguerite Downey for shooting this video.
I'm an invested citizen in this community. Ever since the election, I have felt like a passenger in a car that's being driven by a drunk driver.
Yes.
But you have not lifted a finger.
No.
So let's not make this a referendum in terms of our job as elected folks in South Carolina on what we do or don't like with Donald Trump. Because at the end of the day, it's the Irish prayer of, you know, we can control certain things we can't control.
You're going to impeach.
We rely on you.
It's not just South Carolina either. It seems like there are protests going on around the country, staged to coincide with lawmakers returning home to their districts. In fact, there's a lot of members of Congress who on this recess aren't even going home and are refusing to hold town halls. Chris, what are we seeing nationwide as lawmakers try to take a break, try to go home, or avoid it altogether?
We're seeing a stampede of protesters to these Republican districts urging them to hold these town halls. Now, in California, of the state's 53-member delegation, just about half are holding events. You'll remember Tom McClintock, one of the state's most conservative members. He warned his colleagues on a tape at a retreat in Philadelphia about replacing Obamacare with, quote, Trump care. And that got a lot of folks riled up. He said Republicans would have to own it lock, stock, and barrel. They're coming out in force talking about the executive orders, protesting some environmental regs, the EPA pick. But the funny thing is McClintock is one of the only Republicans in California who's holding these events. Daryl Issa is getting protests. They're going to hold an empty chair event tonight down in the San Diego district. And none of this is much of a surprise. The last poll of California had Trump at just 30% in terms of popularity. So Democrats are really trying to take advantage. Nancy Pelosi said at her event this weekend that, you know, it's fine for you guys to come to mine. You know, I'm glad to see you guys. But what you really need to be doing is going into these Republican districts and giving them hell.
You know, I ran into a Republican congressman at an event, and, you know, he told me privately, you know, you got to be crazy if it, you know, to go back. I mean, because they are very much aware of, you know, just how high tensions are. You know, a lot of people, as we've been discussing, are, you know, going out there expressing all kinds of concerns about health care, about a whole range of issues, and some just don't want to deal with it.
You know, I got to say, I'm not sure that I'm buying the idea that these are all true constituents of the members of Congress who are going home, right? I mean, we've already seen that Priorities USA, which is the Democratic super PAC that backed Hillary Clinton in the 2016 campaign, launched an ad campaign this week aimed at driving protesters to Republican town halls. We've got liberal activists in Florida creating petitions and holding town halls with empty chairs, just like, you know, Chris just mentioned out in California. You gotta wonder how much of this is just liberal activists trying to make Republican lawmakers look bad rather than Republican constituents in Republican districts trying to hold their lawmakers accountable for things that they don't like that Donald Trump has done.
I was talking to a congressional aide yesterday about Donald Trump met with members of Congress last week, Republican members of Congress. And so I was talking to him about it, and he said, when I mentioned something about the town halls and the protests, he said, what are you talking about? Those are just people that are plants. Don't judge us on that. So they don't believe it.
The other thing is why does it really matter to them? They get 500 of some of the most liberal constituents in their district that is strongly Republican come out. You know, there's some photos taken, there's some stories written, but these are not the people that elect them. These are not the folks that send them back there. So I don't know that they really have to listen.
They definitely don't have to listen. I think the only risk here for Republicans is the coverage, right? Because the coverage is exactly what we opened up this segment with. It's the idea that Republicans are being raked over the coals for Donald Trump's missteps over the course of a month. In reality, though, that might only be true in truly purple districts. No, Katie?
Right. Well, absolutely. And, you know, in reality, if you take a look at some of the polls out there, I mean, Trump has 70% plus approval rating among conservatives, self-identified conservatives. It's, you know, even higher among Republican activists. So in these safe red districts, it's not really rank and file Republican activists who are getting mad at these members of Congress. And in fact, a lot of those rank and file Republican voters get mad at their members when they think that their members are being too critical of Donald Trump. So absolutely, we got to take some of this with a grain of salt.
Well, let's talk about one of these purple districts. Let's look in Florida. We've got the Tampa area, which is a rapidly changing part of the state. Republican Gus Bilirakis is about to hold his third town hall, and he's been facing scores and scores of rowdy pro-Obamacare constituents at his first two meetings.
And I'm not defending anyone here in my party or the other party, but just stating a fact, Speaker Ryan has been seen...
We've got also in Orlando, Dennis Ross holding a town hall. So, you know, Republicans in purple districts are facing some heat. I just think it's really questionable whether this is truly a reflection of GOP voters. I mean, I was just reading the Star Telegram, one of our Texas papers, and they ran a great story off of a poll over the weekend that showed Republicans by 80% approve of what Trump has done over the course of the first month.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, Republicans, you talk to Republican lawmakers, you talk to rank and file Republican activists, a lot of them say, you know, this is exactly what he campaigned on. This is why we voted for him. He's doing what he said he'd do, whether that's taking a tough line on immigration, whether that is pushing for repeal of Obamacare. I think the risk for some of these Republican lawmakers in these safer seats is, you know, doing anything that's perceived as too critical of the administration.
Has anybody seen anything other than the ACA driving some of these town halls in terms of the issue? Raised.
I was actually at a Democratic town hall in Florida. I happened to be down there for a story last week. And, you know, certainly in some of these more Democratic districts, you know, the issues are very much tied to concern about the Trump administration. And a lot of people want to hear talk about impeachment, which is actually going a lot further than some of these Democratic members of Congress are willing to go. But at the Republican town halls, you know, certainly you see people raising questions about Obamacare and some of these other kind of big ticket issues. Although I do have to say I was at lunch with a Republican source source of mine, a conservative source of mine, and you know, he actually is a little bit concerned about how the Obamacare issue is going to play out down the road. As much as he was saying that, you know, certainly some of these are professional agitators who are coming to these protests, when the rubber meets the road, if it in fact does on Obamacare repeal, it may end up hitting a little bit closer to home, even in some of these, you know, pro-Trump Republican districts.
What I would say about the ACA is, you know, the thing Republicans may have to worry about is the fact that this narrative could kind of start to take hold. You have people who are showing up with bad health situations. A woman showed up at Nancy Pelosi's town hall who said her son had really bad asthma. Another woman who had breast cancer said it was detected early because of Obamacare. So you see these stories start to build that are essentially the polar opposite of what we saw from the Tea Party in 2009 with the talk of death panels and talk of what ACA would do in the negative. Now you're starting to see people stand up for it who are enrolled in the program, who have benefited from it. And I just think that the more you hear these stories about the millions of people who are in the program, including several million in California, the more you start to think, well, is this really a good idea to take away this program? And I think that's really what the Democrats are trying to do with these things.
It'll be really interesting to see whether that ends up being the takeaway from a week of town halls.
Well, and the private concern among some Republicans is as people become more aware of how much their care may or may not be tied to what's, you know, been on the books the last couple of years, does that actually move the dial in terms mm-hmm. of what even some of these Republican voters want to see? You know, when they maybe start feeling some more direct impacts that they maybe didn't even know were direct impacts, you know, does that change the tenor?
Now, Anita, the return of Congress to their home states has also coincided with the return of Donald Trump to the campaign trail. Is this a deliberate strategy to get back in front of voters, to try to, you know, get back to a tactic that worked so well for him during the campaign?
The only thing that's surprising about it is that it took a month.
We don't win anymore. We don't win a trade. We don't win in any capacity. We don't win anymore. We're going to start winning again. Believe me.
He has been itching to do this. He has wanted to do it since day one. He loves it. He thrives on it. I was talking to some Trump advisors this weekend who said it's therapeutic for him. You know, here he is trapped in the White House. His family's not around. He's working all day. He goes to the residence at night. He just wanted to get out. And people adore him at these rallies.
Rallies, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, 9,000 people came, and it was exactly the kind of people he wanted to see. People who got him elected, people who don't care about Russia, any Russian ties, people who just wanted to see him and say, hey, thanks for doing what you're doing.
I can certainly see that it is a boost for him as a politician and as an official, but I also wonder whether it is not an intentional reminder to Republicans as they return home that voters love Donald Trump.
Right. And I mean, Republicans can't escape that message. Absolutely, that the base is very much in Trump's corner right now. And, you know, we've absolutely seen a disconnect over the last couple of weeks where, you know, you have increasingly seen some lawmakers on some issues, especially on the Russia issue here in Washington, willing to be a little bit more critical of Trump publicly. But back home, there is zero appetite for that among the grassroots. And this was a reminder of that on Saturday.
You know, it's really interesting. I mentioned I was talking to some congressional staffers. Donald Trump meets with members of Congress pretty regularly, and he always asks them, what are you hearing back in your districts? That's his first question. He likes to listen every single time. And so he wants to know the actual policy issues. You know, we kind of have this perception of Donald Trump that he doesn't really care about the weeds of policy. That's what he's asking them in every single meeting.
Well, and one thing to note is, you know, you take a look at his approval ratings. There's a Gallup one out on Monday. You know, overall, 42% of people approve of his performance, 53% disapprove. But when you break it down by party, 86% of Republicans so far approve of the job Donald Trump is doing. And that it sends a strong message to these Republican lawmakers to not stray too far from the administration party line for now.
And what I would add is, you know, even the folks who are sort of on the fence about Donald Trump in states like California, they're not going to come out and really denounce any of these things because they see their constituents and the voters as being solidly behind him. So I think that, you know, you have some of these more purple districts and you have some of these Republicans who right now are just kind of waiting and seeing which way the wind blows to decide kind of how they're going to come out. They still have, you know, a year and a half until the next elections. And I think we'll start to see which way they break in some of the more blue states in the coming months.
Let's get to our next segment. Conservatives from around America gather this week for the annual CPAC conference just outside D.C. And for years, this has been where young conservatives launch big careers. It was also where Donald Trump, many years ago, floated the idea of running for president. Let's listen.
I mean, I wish that, frankly, I wish there was a candidate that I saw that would be fantastic, because I love what I'm doing. In fact, I have a great club that's 15 minutes away. By the way, Ron Paul cannot get elected. I'm sorry to tell you.
And here he is. Now he's president of the United States. And you know, certainly CPAC, I think, is going to reflect both that and the movement that brought him to this point. So I was talking with organizers of this yesterday, and they acknowledge that there is going to be a more populist bent to the gathering this time around. And, you know, they didn't say this, but certainly some of my sources who are looking at the agenda are thinking there may also be a bit of a more nationalist bent. Certainly, those were some of the currents that were animating some of President Trump's supporters during the campaign. This is a source of a lot of tension within the conservative movement. There's a lot of people who are longtime attendees of CPAC, more sort of typical conservative grassroots folks who are alarmed by the presence of Breitbart, for example, which is
well, let's stop with that for a second, because tell listeners about CPAC. Who runs CPAC? Who's making the decisions? Tell them about the American Conservative Union.
Sure. So American Conservative Union, a big sort of umbrella conservative organization that is that takes the lead on putting this conference together. You know, in the past, the event has had a bit of a libertarian bent. You know, as we heard in the clip, the Pauls have been very popular. Actually, I'm told Rand Paul is not going to be in attendance this time around. So that's interesting.
That is interesting.
Right. And I think that sort of shows.
I mean, this is a straw poll winner.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. I mean, for a long time, you know, this has been a gathering for these kind of younger libertarian activists. And, you know, I'm told some of them are still expected to be there this time around. But no question, this is also going to be kind of a refuge for these Trump supporters who maybe they felt under siege in Washington because, you know, it's been a bad couple weeks for the administration.
I'm going to go to National Harbor in Maryland.
Yeah, you call it a safe space, right, for Trump backers. But, you know,
it's safer than Sweden.
Yes, exactly. I hear bad things happened there recently. We're unclear about what, but.
So this speaker lineup from a California perspective couldn't be more distant from where the GOP is here. The same weekend, same week that these folks will be meeting, you know, outside of D.C., you'll have the California Republican Party meeting by the Capitol, talking about who they might choose to run for governor. The leading candidate in California, I could never imagine being at a CPAC conference. This is someone with a climate action plan. This is someone who talks about affordable housing and homelessness. It's just kind of a sign of how distant we are in California from sort of the national brand of the Republican Party right now. And I think, you know, you look through the lineup and you really don't see very many Californians.
Well, you mentioned the brand of the National Republican Party. I think that's going to be very much up for debate at the conference this week. And, you know, even more specifically, the brand of the conservative movement. I was talking with one prominent conservative writer who has received awards from CPAC before. He's not going either this year. But when I asked him, what is his takeaway from looking at the CPAC lineup, which features a lot of Trump supporters this year, he said, well, what is conservatism? You know, that's something that nationally is very much up for debate. And is really that question's really being pushed to the fore this year. There's a lot of people who traditionally have gone to this who feel that it's not at all a traditional conservative lineup.
Well, it's not traditional. Donald Trump is speaking. He's not a traditional conservative at all. Mike Pence is speaking.
And it was more traditional.
Yes, definitely more traditional. But now he's part of the Trump administration. Mm-hmm. We've got Reince Priebus speaking, the chief of staff. We've got Steve Bannon speaking, a top advisor. So, I mean, it is Donald Trump's party.
So let's talk about the controversy from the weekend. After Milo Yiannopoulos, who was a senior editor at Breitbart, kicked off of the CPAC speaker lineup, we're still seeing conservative leaders being forced to defend him. Let's listen right here to Matt Schlapp, chair of the American Conservative Union, on Morning Joe.
College campuses, get anybody at CPAC that's not an anti-Semite.
Yeah, Joe, it's a fair point. But the other point is that whether we like it or not, he is a big voice in this movement. And we believe that our attendees can handle it and make their own judgments on whether or not they think a speaker is saying what is accurate or being inaccurate or being hateful. I don't want to shield that kind of conversation from our attendees. Matter of fact, a lot of our attendees want to have these controversies before them and make their own choices.
Anita, what is Trump team's reaction to Mr. Milo?
Actually, surprisingly, the White House said, we're staying out of it.
Really?
Yeah.
They said they were staying out of it and that CPAC would do what CPAC would do. And I think they kind of knew that CPAC would take care of itself, meaning they would disinvite this guy. But they had already announced that Donald Trump and Mike Pence would speak before this guy was disinvited. And they just thought it would sort of take care of itself. And they said, you know, he's a provocateur. I can't even tell you how many times I heard that exact word over and over. That's just who he is. That's what kind of guy he is. And remember what Donald Trump did. Now, obviously, this is before the latest controversy. But when there was such a controversy over in Berkeley in California recently, Donald Trump tweeted. He threatened the California university system with withholding their money if they didn't let this guy speak.
And that is what is really bothering a lot of my conservative sources. And they are really worried that conservatism has started to be defined not around a set of principles, but about, you know, just who is going to annoy liberals the most. And these are people who are writers and they're operatives. And they're worried that it's sort of being defined down a little bit and are very bothered, you know, even though the invitation to Milo is ultimately rescinded, they're very bothered that it was ever issued in the first place. And they say that the conservative movement needs to be drawing a line between, you know, what's free speech and what is, you know, truly hate speech. And they feel that even before, you know, the very controversial video of Milo surfaced, there was more than enough out there on him that should have been a red flag.
Well, it's an important and defining theme of CPAC is to identify the conservatives who are ideological purists and identify the other group who are more politically rational, if you will, who understand the compromises necessary to win elections. And it seems like the ideological purists are taking very much a backseat on this one.
That's so interesting because, I mean, over the last couple of years, that's always been the debate at CPAC. You know, the people who want ideological purity versus those who say, no, we need to win. And, you know, that was the story I think I wrote there, you know, 3 years ago. But what's very interesting is the question of what does it take to win is a very different question now than, you know, I think anyone thought it would have been, you know, 4 years ago.
I know the White House has tried to stay out of it, and I know that they've tried to, you know, distance themselves from Milo. But, you know, you look at some of the interviews he's given, and you see that, you know, Steve Bannon sort of gave him his big break. He hired him at Breitbart to be this tech editor. He brought him in. So I just don't know if that's going to work. I know that, you know, opponents will try to yoke Milo to the White House and to Donald Trump. And I just don't know how much they'll be able to distance themselves from this Breitbart editor.
You know, Milo is dangerously sticky for Trump because of Steve Bannon. I mean, think back to the things he said before he said the stuff that got him in trouble this weekend. And he's railing against women's rights and transgender people and immigrants and Muslims. And, you know, it took a real special kind of topic to disgust people enough
right.
that the White House wants to get some distance from him. Right. But the truth is, he's still very much via Bannon tied to the administration.
Right. It's true. And, you know, when I talked to Republican strategists and Trump advisors this weekend, they said, now this is before the video, but they said, you know, liberals want to paint us in a certain way. They defended him in that he's outrageous and that's kind of what he does. But they also say it's sort of white noise when Democrats say something's racist now. It's just Democrats saying that. They say that over and over. And I know I said this last week. They just don't care about that accusation so much anymore because it's so much. It's coming every day, all the time. Everything's racist.
Well, one thing that has struck me about this debate over CPAC is how conservatives seem newly willing to engage in this debate. You know, after the campaign, we saw a lot of people being willing to go dark for a little bit because not only did he just win, but, you know, Republican victories up and down the ticket. But, you know, over the last couple of weeks, you know, both among lawmakers and also increasingly among some of these conservative activists, we have seen a new willingness to start speaking out again. And this CPAC, what some might call a debacle, has really invigorated people who are longtime members of the conservative movement, longtime conservative activists, to start speaking out again on people who are concerned about the direction that they feel the conference is taking the movement. They don't want Milo to represent.
You know what was interesting is when you looked at the people that were public this weekend, conservatives that were publicly saying that Milo should not be around, they were never Trumpers. They were not people that supported Donald Trump from the beginning. And so the answer from the White House and the Trump advisors that I talked to are just like, Those were people that never supported him anyway, and so they weren't that concerned about it.
True, with a couple of exceptions. I know there's a prominent conservative radio host, Dana Loesch, who I know drew the line at the video about Milo. But what I do think is interesting is how much some of these folks who, you know, up until now have been, you know, some of the sort of intellectual backbone behind the conservative movement over the last 10 years or so, now they seem to be newly willing to fight again. And CPAC is an early test of which view prevails, I think, as we look at what it means to be conservative in the Trump era.
All right, time for our third and final and my favorite segment, the lightning round. Each of you has to identify one politician, one development, or one issue from the last week that did something relevant to the next election, whether it be in 17, 18, or 2020. And Chris, you get to go first.
So my pick is California Secretary of State Alex Padilla, a Democrat from Los Angeles with aspirations for higher office. This weekend, he traveled to the National Association of Secretaries of State meeting in Washington and tried to get the group of elected colleagues, mostly Republicans, to support his resolution denouncing claims of widespread voter fraud.
Look, not just myself in California, but my colleagues throughout the country, we pride ourselves on free and fair elections, an elections process that is absolutely transparent and true to our small d democracy. And when you start questioning it, when you start creating doubts, that's taking a jackhammer to the bedrock of our democracy.
And he was, for lack of a better word, totally shut down. They would not go along with it. And he gave us a call, and the operative quote here is, "Now I know how Elizabeth Warren feels."
Good one. Katie, you're up.
Okay, I'm going to say Matt Schlapp, who's someone we've been talking about a lot on this podcast, but of course, again, spearheading CPAC, which is a conference that is shaping up to be a haven for Trump supporters and mini-Trumpers from all over the country. And, you know, even moving beyond the Milo controversy, Schlapp's Twitter feed has actually taken on a bit of a Trumpian turn. He is talking about fake news as he announces speakers and, of course, talking about political correctness. Sounds quite a bit like Donald Trump.
Mini-Trumpers. Anita.
I am going to go with Sally Yates, who was the acting attorney general for a while there under Donald Trump. She was fired, if you will recall, for saying she was not going to defend his vetting ban, his travel ban executive order. She was also in the news for issuing a warning about his former national security advisor, Michael Flynn. She is being urged to run for governor of Georgia. She has not said no yet. She got a great response when she was at an event just recently in the last couple of days in Georgia.
You know, I got an email from one of our readers with one word in it, and it was Yatesgate! Exclamation point. So, Sally Yates, wow. Good choice. My turn. I choose Keith Ellison. If he loses the DNC chair race, and fair to say he just might, my question is, does he unequivocally back the new chair?
And so my message is one of unity. All my fellow candidates in this race are friends. I love them, and I honor their service. But I must say that no matter who wins, and I really believe I should, we are all going to have to work together because there is a greater issue here, and this is the welfare of the American people.
Will the Bernie wing of this party be angry if he loses? He could be the congressman to calm them all down. All right, that was a good show. That's it for us. Goodbye, Anita. Thank you so much.
Thanks. I'm off to go see the results of the new McClatchy-Marist poll, and by the time this podcast is live, so will the polls.
Exactly right. Come to our website, read this poll. Goodbye, Katie Glick. Thank you so much, and get back out there to cover some more Republican things.
Bye, Kristen. I'm diving back into CPAC drama. Should be a lot of it this week.
Chris, enjoy sunny California, and we will talk to you again.
See ya. Off to immerse myself in town halls.
Thank you to our executive producer, Davin Coburn, and thank you to our listeners. We want to hear from you, so please send questions and comments to btb@mcclatchy.com. Tell us what you're seeing in your battleground state. We might even ask you to call into our show. Talk to you next week. What does Sweden have besides meatballs and IKEA?
Swedish fish.
That's Swedish fish point. From Sweden? I feel
no,
like not, right?
Right?
It's
that,
like German chocolate
that's,
cake.
No, that's not from Sweden. That's like made up sugar.
It's so delicious, though. I don't know what happened in Sweden last night.
Something tells me it involves a chef.